One of us under much duress, we're going to walk to the bottom of Mount Cook. But we had to have a plan of what we were doing. You don't just go out and go, oh, I'm going to go pop off to walk off to Mount Cook, because just slightly cut off my picture, but it's a 3-hour return trip. And the thing that amazed me while we were walking it and coming back was the number of people that were walking and not really prepared to be walking. Because they were going for quite a hike. As you can see, the snow quite close. In fact, we got to see something I've never seen before. There was a little mini avalanche on the side of the hill not far away from us. It took me a bit long to get the video clip out, so I only got the very end of it. It just kind of, first of all, looked like a little stream, and it's like, look at that. And then it's like, oh, actually, there's a mini avalanche going on. So we had to know where we were heading, and one of us doesn't quite enjoy walking as much as the other. One of us may have done 5 walks in that day. This is because we went in the afternoon, and that was my first walk. But we made it with a lot of perseverance. I do love the fact that they say it's an easy walk. I'm not quite sure who they based it easy on, but certainly not Stephen. the view was magnificent, and we actually talked to some people on the way who had stopped not like probably about 15 minutes back from it. They had a little boy with them who was throwing a bit of a wobbly about having to walk any further. I thought, isn't it the truth that they missed this amazing view because they couldn't actually see their way forward, and actually the rest of the trip, this track from there, was pretty much flat. You just do the last rise into the bottom of Mount Cook. But I mean, they didn't see it because they didn't listen to other people's advice. They weren't well prepared. They had no water with them. They had no snacks for the young boy. So yeah, it's about preparing ourselves for the journey and getting to these places. So we are talking about 1 Kings 18 and 19. But I'd actually just like to jump back to 1 Kings 17, just to give you a bit of a picture about Elijah before what happened. So now Elijah the Tishbite from Tish in Gilead said to Ahab, "As for the Lord, the God of Israel lives, now whom I stand, there shall be neither dew nor rain for the years except by my word." I mean, this is a pretty brave guy. God spoke to him, and he spoke out saying, there's going to be no rain in the land, basically, until I say there's going to be. I mean, because King Ahab, we've already heard, was a pretty bad king. He married a bad wife, which didn't help his situation. But yeah, he spoke out. But once, when Elijah heard what God said, he was prepared to speak out what God told him. So he didn't just hear it, he spoke it. And then the word of the Lord came to him, "Depart from here and turn eastward and hide yourself at the brook, which is in the east of Jordan. You shall drink from the brook, and I shall command the ravens to feed you there." So he went and did according to the word of the Lord. So once again, he's heard from the Lord and he's obeyed. The story goes on, and the brook eventually dried up, and because obviously there was no rain, as he had predicted. So God had taken him away from the land, because obviously he wasn't the most popular person in the land. If he had just told them there was going to be no rain, so there's going to be a major drought, which then followed. But then the word of the Lord came to him again, "Arise and go to Zebrith, which belongs to Sidon, and dwell there, and I will command a widow there to feed you." So he arose. So once again, heard the word of the Lord, followed what he was told to do. So he went to the city, and he came across the widow and her son who were out collecting sticks. He asked the woman for a drink of water. And when she walked away to get him the drink of water, he said, "Oh, and can you give me some bread to eat as well?" she turned to him and said, I don't have any bread. I'm jumping myself around here. We don't have any bread. But he said, oh, we just have flour and water. And he said, make the bread, give me some. And if you do that, the God will provide for you the whole time it doesn't rain. You will be having, they will never run out of flour and things to make the bread, which is what happened. And then once again, after many days, the word of the Lord came to Elijah. Go show yourself to Ahab, and I will send rain upon the earth. So Elijah went to show himself to Ahab. Now the famine was severe in Samaria. So the famine had been going on for about 3 years by this time. So it had been going on for quite some time. If you could imagine no rain or no water for 3 years, that's pretty major. So he then appears back. The king had actually been looking for him. He'd sent out people everywhere to look for him. I was like, you find that guy and you get him and bring him back here. But it wasn't the time. He had to wait on God's timing to do it. And then when Elijah did come back and he ran into Obadiah, and he said, he was talking to him and sort of saying, I want to see the king. But then he said, has it not been told, my Lord, what I did when Jezebel killed the prophets of the Lord? How I hid 100 men and the Lord's prophets by 50s in caves and fed them with bread and water. So Obadiah had looked after some prophets. He had saved them. He had set them aside. And yeah, but so there was other people in the land that were there. So eventually Elijah meets up with Ahab. They have a bit of a confrontation. They call each other some names because they're both saying, oh, you're the one that's ruining the land. So then Ahab sent all the people of Israel and gathered them together at Mount Carmel. So Mount Carmel is the mountain where all the big event takes place. So then Elijah got everybody and he said, come near all of the people and said, how long will you be limping between two different opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal, then follow him. And the people did not answer him a word. So this has been quite a significant thing. I mean, I think it was actually my grandfather had up on his wall, if God be God, follow him, and if not, follow them. And you've got to make that decision. It doesn't happen for you. You've got to make the decision. And here we go. Then Elijah said to the people, I only am left a prophet to the Lord. But Baal's prophets were 450. And if we jump back just to Obadiah there, he'd just told him he'd saved 100 prophets. But he was thinking, I'm the only one left. So we're already sort of starting to feel a little bit sorry for ourselves. But I mean, then we know that they built the altar. The Baal guys built theirs and they cut themselves and they carried on and did lots of drama to no avail, and it went on all day long. But when it came to the evening sacrifice, Elijah got the altar rebuilt. They got it all set up, and then he actually got them to pour 4 big jars of water on it, which is quite significant because, I mean, when I was younger, I thought, oh, the water was just to prove that it wets it, so it's much harder to light. But actually, if you actually think about it, we've just had a 3 and a bit year drought, and there's 4 huge things of water being poured on it. The people must be going, we're dying of thirst here, and here you are pouring it, wasting it on this altar, just so you can prove a fact that probably won't even happen. But God struck it with fire and burned everything up. It burned up the whole altar and every drop of water. There was no water left in it. So after this event, then they all send them away. Oh, he obviously slaughtered all the Baal prophets, so that didn't make him very popular once again. But then he went up onto the mountain, he prayed, and he sent off his servant to go look at the cloud. And actually noted that this is actually the first time he's mentioned that he had someone else with him. This is his servant going up, and he goes and looks for the cloud. And it happened 7 times. I mean, Elijah obviously believed it was going to happen, but I think if I was a servant and I was going backwards and forward, climbing up and looking out to see if there was anything coming, going, who's my master? He's lost the plot. But eventually on the 7th time, there was a cloud the size of a man's hand coming in. And from that, they all started to head back to the other town. And the Lord gave Elijah the strength, and he actually ran back to the town and actually beat them to the town when they were all on chariots. So even there, God sustained him, and because he was following what God had told him to do, ran off and got there first. But then we come to the bit of a swing where Ahab told his wife Jezebel about what Elijah had done. She was furious because basically the Baal prophets were her people, and he just wiped them all out, just like that. And she was so furious, she basically said, so be it to me if I don't have you the same way as those prophets. In other words, you're going to die today. So she did threaten him, and for Elijah, he was afraid, as probably we all would be, because if someone threatened, I mean, she's quite powerful, she's a queen, and she's just said you're going to be wiped out by the end of the day, it's probably not the best way to sort of, doesn't really make your day. So Elijah, by himself, he took a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under the broom tree and asked that he might die, saying, "It is enough now, O Lord, take away my life. I am no better than my father's." So basically Elijah has had this huge big event happen. God's proved his power. He's shown him he can do it. But after that, Elijah goes into a bit of a pits of depression. I mean, we already see it a little bit when he goes, "I'm the only one left," thinking that it's all up to me. And then it became too much for him. It was overwhelming. God then sort of deals with him, builds him up, strengthens him, gives him food, sent by an angel, gives him food, and then actually he then walks for another 40 days. So that substance that God gave him took him from that place of depression and that place of being, oh, what poor old me, and then off to the other mountain, and he took 40 days to get there. So that's quite an impressive feat for somebody who was just a minute ago going, oh, poor me, I'm dying, I want to die. So I won't go more into that story because that's for another day. But but what we need to learn from this is that we all have vulnerabilities. We're vulnerable to attacks. If you have a really high, great something, usually there's a slump on it. Because this is when you get up to the top of the mountain, usually you've got to get down. You can't, unfortunately, we can't just live on top of the mountain. We can be very vulnerable. And this can happen it happens probably a lot in our life, when we make a commitment, we feel great, we come to the front of the church, we're prayed for, we feel awesome, but the next day you get those sort of nagging thoughts, and that sort of happens right through our Christian life. So it's actually learning that we are vulnerable, and actually we need to take care of our human vulnerability. Because we are vulnerable, and all of us are, not all of us are vulnerable in the same way, but we need to learn what our vulnerabilities are. I mean, just like we have physical vulnerabilities, for me, I know that when we were up Mount Cook, it was, if I'd gone out walking with Sue in the morning up the horrendous one she walked, that says it's a nice gentle walk and it's up 100,000 steps straight uphill, I wouldn't have been able to then walk into the bottom as well, because I know my own physical abilities. Doesn't mean I'm not working on them, trying to get them better. But yeah, it's actually, because we know what our physical, what we can do. I mean, we know that, like when we were on the working bee yesterday, we're not all strong enough to be picking up the huge big concrete things and chucking them in the trailer. As we get a bit older, we need to remember we're no longer 21, and we do actually have some things. We also need, I mean, with our physical, we also need to learn what it is we can eat and what we can't eat. As most of you know, I recently had my gallbladder out, so pre that, there was a lot of things I couldn't eat because it made me pretty sick. So we know what those things are, and we learn to work around them. And actually, the other thing we do is we take medication for them. So if we're feeling sick, we learn to know what the right medication is. And so we deal with that by learning how to deal with our physical things. Then we have our emotional vulnerability. And this is a little harder to deal with because we can't always just go, I can take a tablet to make myself feel better than I am currently. Well, probably not legal ones anyway. But yeah, we need to learn that how to deal with our emotions and be prepared that once you've had if you're in one of those people that goes up and down a lot, that once you've had the high, you are going to go down, and be prepared for it. And that actually helps you. It doesn't mean you can wipe it out and go, well, that's just the carnal me and it's never having any effect, because it does have an effect. Just as in with our mental state, that can affect us too, and we can have our ups and downs. And if we need to take medication to bring that back into the right alignment, that's also a good thing. God given us the doctors to prescribe these things to help us. They're not out to harm us. And if it's helping doing it, that's a great thing to be doing. So once again, yeah, we were isolation. We were not created for isolation. But we were created for partnership. And the greatest partnership of obviously is our partnership with God. He wants us to have that partnership with him. He wants us to be in relationship with him. And that isn't so we could have our big mountaintop experiences and then boomf. Because mountaintop experiences like that are only a few times in your life. And you can't just live off those experiences. But God wants to actually us to have an encounter with him in a personal relationship that is every day. He wants to meet with us every day, not getting to this huge big place where all my effort's gone into this and then I crash afterwards because that's how life is. I mean, we can have those as well, but the everyday life is where God wants to meet with us. He wants to be with us. He wants us to have a relationship with him. And then, of course, he also wants us to have a relationship with people, because he didn't just design it that we have one relationship with him and if we cut the rest of the world out. He actually designed us to need people and actually rely on it. Like at the working bee yesterday, we need each other to get these things done. We would never have got that huge pile of rubbish moved if we had never had everybody there chipping in. So in Proverbs 3, 5 and 6, it says, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths. And I think it's a really important verse for us to remember that actually we need to trust in him completely, and we need to lean on him. Because sometimes our understanding can be a little bit fuzzy, and we can get a bit sidetracked and go off on tangents. But actually what we need to be doing is focusing on God and Jesus and actually our relationship with him. And that is where we're supposed to be heading. It's not for all these other things. Our relationship is what is so important. And just one final thought. A strategic partnership is ahead. So we've got to make our decision for that. Like we had to make the decision that we were going to walk into the Hooker Valley and make a plan to do it and do it properly. Because if you just walk in half-heartedly and think, oh, whatever's going to happen, whatever will happen. But we actually need to make our decision that we're going to follow God, follow Him wholeheartedly, and actually have an ongoing relationship with Him. And yeah, there will be bumps in it, but it's to come back to that and go, actually, that is the most important thing in my life, is my relationship with God.
Let's give Stephen a hand.